You're listening to The Kylo Show, the podcast where we talk about how to keep your love on no matter what and why whole healthy families are going to save the world. And it starts right now.
Hello and welcome to The Kylo Show.
Here we are.
It's just the two of us.
I know.
For today.
I know. Feels kind of different.
Foreign.
Yeah.
It's been a while. It's just the two of us.
Yeah, we used to have a crowd here.
Yeah. We have had a crowd, but good people.
Yes.
So we're back at it. Just going to have some big conversations coming up here.
We are. Right.
Do you have any jokes to tell us now? Because the conversation is going to get a little bit heavy.
not yet. No. I'll just save my dad jokes for the middle.
There you go.
Yes.
Well, that was a little bit of a window into what we'll be talking about. Uh-huh. Maybe not dad jokes, but we are. We're gonna do a series addressing and talking about the fatherlessness that's going on.
Big problem.
Big problem.
Ginormous problem.
Mm-hmm.
Like shy of global revival, or at least national revival, it is maybe the biggest hole in our raft.
Yeah.
Is the whole issue of missing fathers in the home.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, like every element of society is affected by it, and especially our kids, especially children growing up and looking around the landscape, and they don't see a dad. They don't see really an example of masculinity in front of them.
Mm.
And the stats are just staggering. Just look it up. If you haven't heard these stats yet, the idea that missing masculine leadership in your home leads to 4 times more likely that you as a child will end up in poverty.
That's crazy.
4 times more likely. More likely to end up in prison, more likely to end up on drugs, more likely to end up, and it's not just like a few percent. It's just staggering how this setup is just killing our children.
Mm-hmm.
And then it becomes a justification. Then you start hearing teaching and training in universities and in the media. And eventually it just becomes a goal for men to be so self-centered that you would just abandon the role of being a father.
Yeah, the big hole in our raft was a good description of the scary that's before us.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... as you read through these things and you start to learn that dads are this incredibly stabilizing force in a family, you would never pick it up on any presentation of a father. Probably, maybe the 80s, somewhere in there, where we lost the framework of a father presenting his role as a protector, his role as a provider, and even a peacemaker, like leading the children towards, let's protect our family, let's protect our identity. When I was a kid, the Brady Bunch, now we make fun of the Brady Bunch like it was just a bunch of twisted knuckleheads that were naive. You're like, no. That dad was leading that blended family to a unit again and again and again. And the mom and dad, they were the stabilizing force of all the dynamics of a wild, wild time.
Yeah, I didn't grow up with the Brady Bunch, so I don't all I remember is the introduction with all their faces and mm-hmm. looking at each other, which I think is funny because we're doing that on Zoom call now. But
yeah, they were Hollywood Squares. Hollywood Squares. And
But I remember there was a show called Step by Step when I was growing up. Uh-huh. That was a blended family. And then Family Matters, like TGIF was the Friday night sitcoms that would come on. And all of those shows portrayed the father as the protector, as this voice that was consistent, that was set a boundary, a support role to the mom. I mean, all of those shows that I remember watching as a kid mm-hmm. had this had high value for a family unit that had two parents in the home mm-hmm. that were partners in creating a safe place, going after developing and maturing their children, even if they were blended or not. But that's what I remember from sitcoms, which more and more you see shows on that are single parents, usually moms mm-hmm. with just her kids.
Yeah, that was a Partridge Family for us, you know. The Partridge Family was this single mom that was super cool. And it was, you know, kind of, yeah, they're identifying that, yeah, there's a divorced family out there. There's a single mom. I'm raised by a single mom. Mm-hmm. My mom's working her head off and she's doing her best to be the stabilizing force. But I really have no man lessons in front of me. Mm-hmm. So I'm a boy teaching myself to be a man. And it's not going well. Yeah. Because I'm just a boy that's getting older.
That's a crazy thought. If you just the reality of not having that masculine example in front of you and it being left to your own to develop and not having a mentor be able to step in and fill that role to give you an example. Because I mean, you had kind of a crazy upbringing with a lot of different men that came through, but none of them, there's only one that you've ever talked about that kind of actually took the time and really engaged you into trying to be that place.
Which is, you know, it's a different planet when a man steps into your life. So my parents divorced when I'm 5-ish, you know, so we go 5 until 12. So 6 years without a man in the house, a bunch of boyfriends, you know, mm-hmm. show up on the mm-hmm. scene and they're whatever, you know, they're there. We're just kind of scared of them.
Yeah.
So we're kind of like,
staying out of the way.
We're like cats, watching the owner get a new dog. Okay. And we're just kind of like, what the heck? You know, and the dog's walking around the house and peeing on the couch and on the door and whatever. And then they leave. Mm-hmm. And then the cats come back out again. You're like, hey, okay, we can sleep in the chair again. And then here comes another dog. We're like, oh, gosh, we got to back up. And that was my life as a kid was, I'm a cat. I'll never become a dog. Mm. You know, I'm just scared of them. And then my mom marries a guy. And he takes an interest in training these boys to be men. So I was 12. So it's like a perfect time. Mm-hmm. I'm mom. My body's changing, and I'm out there splitting firewood, and he's yeah. taking me out hunting, and we're shooting guns, and he's, you know, I remember first time I ever got drunk was at 13. Here's a beer.
Maybe so, not the example of.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, it was like I'm sitting out there with the boys drinking beer, and it was like, okay, I'm becoming a man. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm learning to associate with other men. I'm learning to behave. I'm transitioning to manhood. So that was 3 years. So 12 to 15 years old, a lot happened in my man lessons. A whole bunch of them I had to unlearn. But I learned a bunch of stuff in that spot. And then, boom, 15, they divorce, and I'm on my own again.
What is, in that season, like, because we're talking about the likeliness of poverty, going to prison, getting someone pregnant, I mean, you had him for those 3 years. What was the you getting in trouble before having him and after him and then during him? Like, did you steer away from some of those more problematic situations when you had him in your life? Was there more consequences you feel drawn to, I don't know, make him proud of you? Was there a different pull during that season? Because just looking at these stats, like what when you had a dad in your life in that season, did it change how you behaved?
Well, it's kind of funny. Both times I ever got arrested was during those years.
Okay.
You know, and it's kind of funny. I remember when your mom first found out that I went to jail. I said, you know, we were sitting around a table with some friends. I said, yeah, the first time I got arrested. And your mom says, what?
The first time?
Yeah. We've been married like 30 years. What did you just say? I said, honey, I told you this. You did not tell me this. But both times I got arrested as a teenager, one was for vandalism and one was for a minor in possession of alcohol. Hmm. So I was supposed to be smarter than that. But there was a dad there mm-hmm. to say, knock it off.
Yeah.
You know, pull your stuff together. You're blowing it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, geez, you know, and you're going to clean up your mess and you're going to act like a man. And so I was on probation for a year. I had to go to this company that I vandalized and I had to, you know, do community service basically. And I was out there, but I felt like a total drag. You know, I was just such a full of shame, just yeah. an idiot. So I never did that again, mm-hmm. but I kept drinking, but we just
hit it better.
Yeah. Yeah. We got better hiding it. It was just part of my life. Sure. And at the same time, you know, I had a girlfriend, I was sleeping. It was just, but when he left, I moved in with my girlfriend. Mm. And we were on the fast track to the bottom. You know, we were going to create poverty.
Yeah.
And live in it. I was going to be impoverished in Weaverville for the rest of my life.
It's so crazy to think about the disruption that season he created. I think he did help protect you from some of the life choices, but then when he left, you went right back to derailing yourself. And I know that the only reason why you got back on the tracks and changed was because you found Jesus.
Yeah, at 21.
Yeah.
You know, so I was 5 years, but the Lord put Chris Vallotton mm-hmm. in
my life.
I was going
to ask, when did Chris show up?
Yeah, and he was only 7 years older than me. So he was like a big brother. He was, you know. He
wants the dad card.
He likes to say, who's your daddy? You know, like, not you. You're not my daddy. You're my bro. But for 5 years, he's trying to mm-hmm. pressure me to go to church and whatever.
So when did you meet Chris? You
started I was 16.
Okay. And your stepdad left when you were?
15.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So it was like the Lord just putting these posts in my life, mm-hmm. and but I had men. I mean, my bosses were men. Mm-hmm. The community of people I worked with were all men. So I'm looking around, but they're all just, you know, in my mind, they're crazy. They're just all crazy. But I'm soaking up the lessons. But when I get saved at 21, I'm surrounded by this community of brothers. And that's the game changer, I think. And I think that's what's missing primarily. We can harp on the father problem, mm-hmm. but I really think for men, it's a brother problem. Like, you have got to be surrounded by healthy, whole, mature brothers. Because you need some feedback. Mm. You know, as you go off the rails, one of your friends has got to say, knock it off.
Yeah.
not the police. You know, as an adult man, there's really nobody to tell you to knock it off outside of the police, because you can do whatever you want for as long as you want. And if you surround yourself with yourself, you just become more of that.
Yeah.
And if you surround yourself with other narcissistic, abusive, self-centered, manipulating consumers, then you essentially enter a contest with them. And it's a journey towards who can be the biggest pig and who can consume the most of beauty and resources. And that is the opposite of what a man is there to do. A man is really there to serve. His primary life and character looks like Christ. And so that's what changed my life.
Yeah.
That was, you know, age 21. I met a pile of those guys. And I'd never seen anything like it. I had never seen anything close to it. I kind of felt like I was in Australia. You know, the first time I ever went to Australia, I'm like, what's that? What's that? What, goodness, what is that? I've never seen a tree like that before. What is that, a cockatoo in the backyard? Somebody left the window open in the pet store. Like, no, just flocks of those things. Seriously, where am I? That's how I felt with all these men that loved their wives, had were raising their own children.
Yeah,
this was you guys have been married for 25 years to one person, with, and these are all your children. This is, where am I? That group of men began to pour into my life, and I owe everything that's going on in my life right now to that experience.
It's pretty wild to think about how foreign this experience was from, you know, you getting saved to your upbringing of having seen men that are willing to fight for their family, to defend, to protect, to honor, to live a certain standard so naturally. You know, it wasn't like they had to go to school for it. It wasn't like they had to read a bunch of books for it. They just had this surrendering of their heart to the Lord and to live a godly lifestyle. And that's kind of was enough of their compass to, this is who we're going to bring. Obviously, there's all these resources to make you better at that. But I always, you know, the ability to be selfish isn't just restricted to people that are non-Christians at all, but that community of men that you're talking about and the permission for feedback feels like it did really change so much of the game for you, because you had all the makings of being a really selfish guy. You probably would have been quiet, not as loud as some other guys, because that's just more of who you are. You're not as obnoxious, but it's just really intriguing, this brotherhood spin that you've kind of proposed with the fatherlessness. So how do you become, because we have such a fatherlessness issue going on, and you're talking about you got to become a good brother. How do you become a good brother if you don't have a father?
Great question. I remember sometime, you know, last couple of years, I saw a newscast about this place in Shreveport, Louisiana. It was a high school. I think they had 20-some arrests in 3 days on the campus for these guys fighting. And it was, you know, it was crazy. Like, shut the school down. These kids are fighting 3 days in a row. And some dads found out about it. And this one dad in particular, he created this organization called Dads on Duty. And it was fascinating to watch this thing. This group of men, They just linked arms and they went to the school. They're at this high school and they've said to the principal and the and whoever else they needed permission from, can we help? We'll just show up. We'll just be there when they get there. And in essence, what happened is this group of dads see that their children need to be protected, and they came together. And mm-hmm. that group of fathers that came together became a band of brothers. Mm-hmm. They are now working together towards a common goal to protect, mm-hmm. To provide resource for the school that is in so much peril, to connect with these kids that are strangers, and a bunch of them are fatherless. Mm-hmm. And now you got these men all over the school every single day, and these boys are not about to mess with those dads.
Yeah.
They'll mess with each other, you know, and it was, you know, the comments I remember was the news station was interviewing them, and these kids are saying, we feel safer. Mm. We feel protected. We feel more like ourselves again. We stop fighting. No one took on any of these men. Mm-hmm. You're like, we take on a teacher because we have given ourselves so much permission to be disrespectful to this particular teacher, and they can't really do anything to us. But all these new relationships with these men are untested. And so I'm not sure if that guy will kick my butt yeah. if I push the line with him. And this one girl says, have you ever seen the look? Have you ever got the look from a dad? Yeah. And so these guys are just like, try me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Make my day, punk. You know, it was just kind of, and it was just that energy, that dad energy, and they were collected as a unit, and they're laughing together, they're moving together. The kids can all see that it's not just one. It's a whole team. I remember African proverb that says, you know, if you don't initiate the young men into the village, they'll light it on fire just to feel its warmth. Mm. And you're like, this is because the young men didn't build anything. They haven't built anything. They just really know how to destroy things. So the dads, the men, the brotherhood who have built everything that these kids were born into are the only ones that are going to protect it. So you have to actually teach a boy, mm-hmm. act like a man, and protect what you're experiencing. Protect what has been built for you. Mm-hmm. Protect the women. Protect the systems. Steward responsibly your environment, mm-hmm. because boys just naturally know how to break stuff.
This is true.
Yeah, if you give a little boy a car, he'll tear it apart. He'll be out there with a hammer smashing it. You know, you give him a model of something, he'll just tear it apart. You know,
what is its limits?
Yeah. It's just in the human heart to destroy. And maturity is what trains you to make your surroundings better.
Mm-hmm. I love that story. I'd be curious as to where it's at today, you know, because mm-hmm. it happened a couple years ago, and how maybe these young men are choosing to protect something that these dads have created. Mm-hmm. I wonder what the partnership looks like now and what it's shifted.
Well, it's a national organization now.
No.
It's mm-hmm. happening on numerous campuses now.
Oh, that's awesome.
So they've every collection of men, mm-hmm. brothers, you know, they become brothers. They say, how do we do that for our kids? Mm-hmm. How do you? And they go, well, you just got to have a point, man. It's the most responsible. Make him the leader. And, you know, it's pretty fantastic. The masculine energy that is pointed mm-hmm. at a community, you know, it is It's exactly what's missing.
Yeah.
That's why fatherlessness is so devastating to homes, to schools, to communities. You know, our kids are training themselves to burn down the village to feel its warmth.
Hmm. Yeah. Now, this topic that we're discussing, the fun thing is that I'm kind of getting kicked out, but it's okay.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to be replaced with a bunch of fathers.
Yes.
That are becoming a band of brothers. Mm. So you're going to want to keep listening as we go through this series, because I see the value in this, and I experience it from coming from a home that has a father, having a husband who's very engaged with our children as a father. But I don't know that I understand the fight in the way that you men would, mm-hmm, in creating this. So I'm excited to kind of have our listeners have a different take and viewpoint on this. And we also are going to have Chris Valentin join us, because he just wrote a book on this, which is really fun. Mm-hmm. So you'll want to stick around as we go through this series, as they unfold and kind of just speak to this from different men that are amazing. We're going to have the mission on here as well. Mm-hmm. They're going to be talking, you know, they run an orphanage and they're trying to change an identity that these kids have been given, that you are rejected or alone, mm-hmm, and restoring them to living a life, believing who they really are and called, and, you know, inserting fathers in their, yeah, life. Yeah. And we love going down there. So we have a lot of really great stuff packed in the upcoming episode. So, mm-hmm, you won't want to miss that at all. Yeah. So
excited.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be some new voices on here.
Yeah.
But it's all, brilliant conversation, mm-hmm, and going to be super helpful for how do we course correct and, you know, add life-giving support to our families, to each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll have a perspective of really what does family look like on so many different levels, and what does it mean to become a whole, healthy person,
yeah,
that, you know, that can then go be a whole healthy family,
yeah,
that can change the whole world.
And that's what we're after.
Yeah.
Which is good. All right. Well, we're going to jump into questions. So awesome. We'll be back in just a minute.
We want to tell you a truly inspirational story. In 1997, starting with nothing but their faith, Steve and Kathy Horner sold everything and moved from Weaverville, California to Tijuana, embarking on a journey to create an orphanage. Since then, over 5,000 children have been rescued, loved, and restored through the mission's radical faith-based approach. And now, over 30 years later, Jimmy and Gina Horner, their children, are continuing to fight, believing that the church can create an orphanless world.
They are transforming nations one child at a time, and you can be a part of this incredible mission by joining the Missions Sponsor Program. For just $30 a month donation, this directly helps the children's needs and allowing the mission to create an extended community of care around these kids. By joining the sponsorship program, you'll receive a monthly newsletter, which I love to get, and updates on the kids that you're sponsoring. And these kids that you're sponsoring come from all over the world, Mexico, Romania, and Nicaragua. I mean, they're providing services like orphan care, after-school programs. They are doing all sorts of amazing things to help better these children.
We are believing with them that within our lifetime, an orphanless world is possible. And every contribution brings us closer to that reality. Your generosity can change lives and transform nations.
It's as easy as visiting this website, www.themission.org/sponsor. This is how you become a sponsor for a child today. Just remember, we are partnering with the mission and helping create whole healthy people that create whole healthy families. All right, we're back with questions. In case you didn't know, we are going to keep taking questions on this topic of, mm-hmm, fatherlessness. Mm-hmm. So please DM us and send them to either me or you, Danny, Brittany. You know, that's in case you didn't know who that was. And we'll get them on the show because that's what we love, to answer your questions. You've said it's your favorite thing, which means you got to keep giving us your questions. Mm-hmm. So make sure that you do that, and we'll keep bringing them up. So, all right. I have question number two that's written on here is probably one of the questions that Ben and I are pretty passionate about this topic, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on it around this issue of fatherlessness. Mm-hmm. So the question is, does passiveness in men lead to some of the fatherlessness issues that we are seeing?
100%. Yeah. It's the equivalent of somebody breaks in the house in the mm-hmm. middle of the night, and the husband tucks his knees up to his chest and looks at his wife and says, "What are you going to do?"
Yeah.
And you're like, how disgusting is that thought?
I have actually been in a situation where if Ben would have done that,
yeah, you'd have stabbed him with a fork.
Would have not gone well at all.
Poor guy. All he had was a fork.
He defended our honor with the fork. But I mean,
yeah,
being in that situation,
yeah,
if that would have been Ben's response, I...
Honey, wake up. Honey, I heard a noise outside.
I would have moved back in with you guys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the challenge in relationships, in a home environment, is for the man to find his courage, mm-hmm. for the man to enter the vulnerability of a hard conversation. The vulnerability of a decision that you could be wrong. Mm-hmm. You will be, you know, plan on it.
Yeah.
The expression of your needs, and mm-hmm. to stand there in the light and to let your wife, even your children, see that you need something. The bulletproof, calloused man is just as yeah. useless in that moment as the one, Saving Private Ryan. There's mm-hmm. a famous war movie where, you know, there's this guy that is supposed to be bringing ammunition to his friend who's upstairs in a hand-to-hand combat with a German soldier. You know, they're fighting, and he's got the solution. He's running up to bring him what he needs, and he just gets scared, and he just tucks and sits on the stairs and listens while the enemy kills the guy he was supposed to add strength to. Mm-hmm. And then the German soldier comes down the stairs, looks at him kind of in disgust and with a smirk, sees him covered in ammunition and has a gun. He doesn't even, not even threatened by the coward, and trots right past him. Mm-hmm. And it's just the bottom falls out of a man when he loses his courage to add strength, mm-hmm. to supply your teenager, your daughter, your wife, your son, your brother with strength that they need. Mm-hmm. It's only on the other side of showing up. Mm-hmm. So passivity in a man is that's toxic masculinity right there.
Yeah, I mean, toxic masculinity is we like to talk about that one a lot. I wanted to go back to one of the things you said, putting on display your needs and not being the calloused, bulletproof. I was listening to Delaney describe her dad to someone the other day. And she says, my dad is brave, tender, and present. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that's beautiful. Because Ben doesn't need to be loud, obnoxious, aggressive, overbearing. He doesn't need, or distant. But he what we fought in our marriage and him being a father in our home was him showing up and being all those things that she's now describing. Mm-hmm. Is he had to fight through the passive to keep his needs on the table because he married a very large, obnoxious woman who just won't stop. And I am just like I have opinions about everything. So for him to keep it on the table and not become super passive was a battle that we had to learn. And it did show up in his parenting because I just took over. Mm-hmm. And so I think this, when we meet with people and marriages and the man has taken that passive role and he has nothing but a scared wife and children because he's not engaged in that. Mm-hmm. And so this is, I mean, as much as that you're going to make mistakes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And there was lots of that we did. Mm-hmm. Being on the other side of it is the most rewarding thing that we have in our marriage is that Ben fought that one and he won.
Yeah, and the brotherhood aspect of this is just team. You have team. Mm-hmm. You know, two men working together. Ecclesiastes says two are better than one.
Yeah,
and it speaks to another key to the fatherlessness problem is the breakdown of the marriage, the team. Mm-hmm. When the team breaks down, the kids suffer the most. You want to give something to your children? Love their mom. Mm-hmm. Do a great job. You know, I don't have any bumper stickers there that say that, but you know, it
could be the next ones that we produce.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Get your team together. Mm-hmm. Be a team. Bring strength to your family. And it's men, be a team, but husband and wife, be a team. You got to work it out. You got to do the team building work for your family so your family can be a team. Lead your family in being a team.
Yeah.
And that's another key contribution to fatherlessness is, yeah, there's a dad in the home, but the team's broken.
Yeah. Well, the next question we have is it talks about how fathers are supposed to go to church, set an example for their kids and spiritual community. The question is, what would you say to dads and men who are not going to church? How will this affect their kids? Like, I think of that team aspect. Like, mm-hmm. What is the example that you're trying to set for your kids? And will that have an effect if dads don't go to church and have value for their spiritual development and growth?
I'm assuming these are Christian dads, right?
I think so.
Well, it's an example. Mm-hmm. You know, your kids are watching you, whether you want them to or not, and the whole do as I say, don't do as I do thing doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, I remember my mom puffing on a cigarette. You know, she says, hey, I might get you with one of these. I'm like, well, what you don't know is I'm stealing them out of their fridge and I'm smoking them, you know, while you're at work.
Okay.
Yeah, da, da, da. And that is... Yeah, my mom used to keep a carton of cigarettes in the fridge. So you pull them out of the back because she just opened the front, you know, you just pull them out of the back and she thinks, okay, we're good. I don't know if she wasn't counting them. But the example is the download to your family. So if the dad is not participating with the team, the family won't be a team. That's just how this works. It's not necessary to participate in spiritual disciplines and it's not necessary. It's just an option. So it's inconvenient and I don't want to do it, so it's an option.
What do you think about the, I think statistically, as far as church, Mother's Day is the most attended, Father's Day is the least attended. It feels like it falls in this. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that Father's Day is the least attended?
I think it's because men like to do stuff. That's a manly behavior is go do stuff. not necessarily
gather.
Yeah. You know, be the hub as much as, let's go check that out. Let's go do that thing. You know, I bet there's something over there. So if you ask the dad, well, if you could do anything, what would it be? Like, over there, you know, that that thing I don't get to do as much of. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, the mom would say, oh, my family all in one spot, you know, together. Let's go have lunch. I mean, I bet you that it's the same thing with restaurants. Like the restaurants are just booming on Mother's Day and probably not so much on Father's Day. Mm-hmm. It's more like there's a...
Take the mountain.
Take the mountain, or dad's cooking in the backyard, or
on the grill he just got.
Yeah, you know, something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It does feel like the need to go, the need to do, the need to be away from people. Mm. You know, is I think much stronger in men than it is with women.
Interesting.
Which is another part of the brotherhood problem. Mm-hmm. Is if a man has the option to do what he wants, he's alone. He's alone. He's doing something alone. He's like, oh, I can do whatever I want. Yeah.
Okay, well, alone.
That's not true. Okay. What would I like to do with the family? I think that's what you meant to say, right? Yeah. Yeah. Well, that is. Just there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are very, very few women pioneers, you know, walking through the woods for years alone. You know, it's kind of a man's world.
And we're going to get all sorts of responses on that one.
Yeah. Well, bring it.
Bring it. Okay. Another question we got was, how do you respond? How do I respond to my child who's dealing with envy, jealousy, and confusion because the other kids have a father and they don't?
I think you can listen. You know, I don't, unless you're you know, changing that about your family dynamic. I mean, I was raised by a single mom. I was in Cub Scouts. Mm-hmm. You know, so I remember being surrounded by kids that I was the kid in the room that didn't have a dad present. And every time we had a jamboree or, you know, they would give us this little bag of wooden parts, you mm-hmm. know, and some instructions. And it was your job to turn this into a project and produce it, mm-hmm. You know. And they would hand it to me, and it might have been, you know, like hieroglyphics that I was supposed to interpret or something. I'm like, what do I do with this bag? You know, yeah. And my buddy's dad would grab my bag.
Yeah.
Because he's going to build his for his son, you know. And so that's what he does. He turns this bag thing into a NASA launch pad with – a capsule that comes off, you know, and he had all the tools, and he had the workbench, and he had the drill and the sand, you know, and the paint, and he did this thing, and he handed it to me. I'm like, wow, you did that? And then he built his son a little salt and pepper shaker thing, and it worked, and it was like, and so his son got first place. Mm-hmm. I got third place. So the dad got first and third, but I was upset that I lost. You know, I was like, oh, I got third place. I got a silver or mm-hmm. whatever, blue. I don't remember what it was, but I just was looking at mine like he didn't try as hard on mine as he did his own son's because he loves his son more. And you know, it was totally what was going on inside of me.
Yeah,
but I had friends who had dads. Mm-hmm. And I don't, you know, that's probably many more kids today have friends who don't have dads.
Yeah.
So it's, I think that's maybe a different momentum these days, which is the families that are intact, if you mm-hmm. will, you know, are harder to come by. And so it's much more natural to not have a pesky father ruin all your plans.
Hmm. I've watched Lincoln's Taekwondo there's a few kids in there that their moms are the only ones that I ever see that are in there at all the award ceremonies, all the things. So, and what I've heard them talk about, they're divorced, dad's not really engaged. What I've loved watch happen is his teachers step in and help them tie their belt, help them mm-hmm. adjust, say, what did your mom say? I mean, what I hear you saying is that your mom puts you in an environment where there's other dads mm-hmm. that were willing mm-hmm. to step in and be that role model. And that I see that happen in Lincoln's Taekwondo studio. And I love watching it because I think that is so much what this child needs. Mm-hmm. And your willingness to be inconvenienced because mm-hmm. it's not your kid. You don't have that responsibility, but you've given your life to serving these kids. And I mean, I can't say enough about his little Taekwondo plays. They give their life for these kids. And there's a bunch of young boys in there that don't have dads yeah. that are running around.
Yeah. And you think about what happened to the Cub Scouts, you know, the Boy Scouts whole deal is the enemy targets that with mm-hmm. predators who then go on to exploit these little boys' young lives and then a whole nation's perspective of what was otherwise a way to build mm-hmm. young men.
Yeah.
And now it's nationally agreed upon that is a sewage pond. That's a dangerous place. You would never do that. And you know, every place where you could trust a group of masculine leaders to impart strength and an example to your children, the enemy works to make that a scary place, including the church.
Yeah.
You know, top billing is Catholic priests abusing all the altar boys, and you know, that this pedophile is a pastor in that church, and so every gathering of men becomes a scary place. Mm. So single moms are afraid that everywhere they would put their vulnerable children, there's a exploitation waiting for them, which isn't true, but it could happen. And maybe on a scale more today than when I was a kid, because porn has just ravaged the heart of men. Mm-hmm. They forgot that they're protectors yeah. because of their practice of exploitation mm-hmm. Through porn.
I guess that's why it's all the more reason for us to really develop that band of brothers that holds us accountable and gives us feedback.
Absolutely. And if you surround yourself with a bunch of men that are doing porn and have somehow turned it into a lifestyle, then, you know, that part of you stays broken. Mm-hmm. That's why it's so important that you surround yourself with men who are going to challenge you mm-hmm. to level up, you know, to be yeah. a great provider. That starts with, I will protect other people yeah. from me. Mm. Step one, I will protect you from my selfishness, from my punishing anger, from my distraction, from my poor priorities. I will protect you from being a consumer to the vulnerability of this house.
That's why we need whole healthy people.
Yes,
because they create whole healthy families.
Absolutely.
And we're going to dive so much into this. Mm-hmm. I'm excited for you all. I'm praying for encounters and revelation and that heaven would invade earth
yeah.
and all of this and that things get restored like never before.
Yeah.
So awesome. Well, you're going to want to stay tuned because it's going to be exciting around here. I'm pretty darn sure. So thanks for joining us and we'll see you next time on The Kylo Show.
Thanks for listening. Never miss an episode of The Kylo Show by subscribing to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or watch us on the Loving on Purpose YouTube channel. Don't forget to submit your questions and testimonies to thekyloshow.com. The Kylo Show is produced by Ali Armerding, co-produced by Ashley Beck and Anna Hill, sound engineer and edited by Taylor Silk, and show promoter Christian Zamora. Don't forget, whole healthy families gonna save the world.